Hello everyone, and welcome to another webinar in our fabulous 2021 series. This is webinar 5, Coaching to Drive MSL Excellence. My name is Helen Kane and I am the CEO of One MSL, and we would like to welcome everyone who is joining us virtually for the webinar. Hello, and a huge shout out to our fantastic, the largest group of panelists we've had today. There was huge interest in participation in this particular webinar. So hello to all of our panelists and thank you so much for your time. As previously, I really cannot do justice to this group in the time that we have available. So if you would like to discover more about them, all of their information will be available on the One Community portal, which is where this hosted webinar will be recorded. So what are the objectives of this session? This really is about a conversation. This is not intended to be a skills session. And this is such an exciting topic. And it really is about hearing opinion and to invite all of you, as I said earlier, to join the conversation. So we'll kick off with a poll and then I'm going to hand over to Kevin, who is going to lead us through the rest of the webinar. So for everyone who's joined us on the line, please can you tell us which of the following best describes your role so that we can have a sense of the individuals who've joined us today? Okay, so Kevin, I think this is a really great point to hand back to you and you can make some comment on the findings.
Yeah, so a huge variety, which is great to see. Largest sample being in the in-role MSL, so greater than 12 months, which is often where people start to kind of feel the need for coaching, the wanting to get the best out of themselves. So we're going to explore that in more detail. But it's great to see that we've got people from all levels within organisations, which actually, when we're thinking about coaching, it is something that needs to be part of the culture. So we'll explore a little bit more about that later on. What we'd like you to do now is tell us what you understand by the term coaching. So is it a process by which one person, the coach, gives another person, the coachee, instructions? Is it a process where a manager gives a direct report instructions? Or could it be a process by which one person, the coach, helps another person, the coachee, solve their own problems, or is it something else? So, brilliant. Overwhelmingly, we've got 90% of you saying that it's a coach, someone helping another person solve their own problems. So that's reassuring. It's also not unusual to get the first answer as well, because that's often people's experience of coaching. Particularly in recent years, where actually the time available for particularly managers to spend time with their teams is so limited that the intention is often to coach, but the reality is there is so little time that it's much quicker for the manager to give instructions to their direct report. And what we're going to talk about today is why we think it's important that actually we flip that and maintain this process by which the coach helps the coachee solve their own problems. So our first question to the panel, what is the value of coaching in the support of driving medical excellence? And Andrew, I'm going to come to you first. Could you give us your thoughts on this?
Thanks, Kevin. For me, the answer is fairly simple here, that coaching is a huge amplifier or multiplier of pretty much anything else that we do in medical excellence. It really is the piece that reinforces and embeds the behaviours and capabilities that we're looking to build in our teams. So a couple of examples I'd give is, when I've experienced coaching in the past, some of the most impactful coaching I've had is that's taken me from my comfort zone into my stretch zone and and not allowed me to sort of stay where I was and drive that further step towards what we'd be looking for in a medical excellence space. And the other piece for me is, after any training intervention, there's that natural tail as people forget or revert to previous behavior, and coaching has that ability to catch that and to reinforce and embed those behaviors. So I think it's a fundamental piece of any effective medical excellence plan.
Brilliant. Thanks, Andrew. We're going to come back to some of that in a minute. Mark, what have you got to add?
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. I believe that coaching is absolutely essential to drive medical excellence, and it's also an absolutely core part of the MSL manager role. The MSL role is a very complex one. It's easy to be pulled in many directions. So I think the first question for an organization really is to define what is medical excellence, what does good look like, and to actually begin there. And I think if you can clearly define in your organization what are the strategic priorities, what's the core focus of the role, where do you want MSLs to be spending time, if you can build a comprehensive competency or proficiency framework that MSLs can use, that again defines the different aspects of what good looks like and how to develop in role, then I think it's easy for MSLs in the organization to understand what good looks like, what the organization expects from them, and how to develop in role. And then you can have that conversation. Everyone understands what's expected and how to develop. And really, I think that coaching from the MSL manager is then the lever for making that happen and striving, moving towards that medical excellence, getting from good to great, moving away from being perhaps in the long time past a support function to being a really well-defined function in your own right.
Brilliant, thank you, Mark. Again, we're gonna come back to that in a minute. It's really interesting that you say that, because I also believe that to be true. But before we move on, may I ask, can I ask you for your opinion?
Sure, Kevin. Thank you for the question. I would say if you ask any astute medical affairs director or MSL excellence manager, they'll tell you that there has been a paradigm shift in the way MSLs work, the tools and resources that they use. And also a lot more emphasis these days is put on the soft skills and emotional intelligence, the strategy moving from push to pull, and the number of stakeholders the MSLs are managing these days. So having worked as MSL myself in my first roles and then later establishing the MSL teams, I've learned that, you know, from carrying hard copies of the clinical publications to be discussed with KOLs and HCPs, to how we started using the laptops and the iPads, and how from a core data discussion on efficacy and safety of molecules, now it is more about health economics and outcomes research and the real world evidence. And also from a plain Jane science data dissemination to emotional intelligence, combining with the art of scientific storytelling. You know, all these are now the prerequisite for an MSL. And we know that there are very few people who are self-starters and self-motivators and who have done it all. So that is why it requires a coach, you know, to do the initial hand-holding, tell that tricks, and I would say the objectional handling and the functional nuances, so that MSLs can gain confidence and can excel in their jobs. I mean, the monumental demand, you know, requires a new breed of MSLs as well as MSLs managers, so that they can keep on changing, learning, unlearning, and relearning. At the same time, you know, the kind of stakeholders they are managing, whether it is sales or marketing or the training department internally or the HCPs and KOL, the medical bodies externally, it has all been very demanding on the skills of the MSLs.
Absolutely.
And that is why it is only coaching which comes to the rescue. So to achieve excellence, MSLs need to strive to do better, and coaching is your answer.
Brilliant. I don't think we could have a better advocate. It's almost like you've done a TV advertisement for coaching in the medical excellence function. Thank you for that. I think Maya said this really clearly, but it is, you know, if we refer back to a previous webinar around upskilling. Upskilling takes many forms, but I think that coaching actually supports that. And as all of our panelists have said so far, the role is complex. The role is many things. And everyone will have a different strength and everyone will have a different area that they could be better at. And the beauty of using coaching is that you can tailor that to the needs of that individual. So just in the same way as an MSL does not have to deliver the same job, the same task, the plain Jane approach that Maya referred to, nor does the manager as the coach or the coach as the coach. Actually, it's about individualizing what it is that individual needs. And again, we talked about competencies, and Mark, you know, highlighted this kind of need for an organization to identify what it is they need MSLs to do excellently. And we talk about the triangle of success. So we talk about the need for MSLs to now be balanced in what they're able to do. So it's no longer just about scientific excellence. It's about engagement excellence. It's about business acumen because of this changing need of not only the organization, but the healthcare environments that we're working in, no matter where we are in the world, they're all changing all the time. And what we wanted to highlight is that coaching sits around that triangle of success. So coaching can support every single element of that. Even down to the core, the kind of the role, coaching can support that too. So it really is all encompassing. So another poll, we'd be really interested to know, who is it that's providing your coaching at the moment? Is it your manager? Do you have a designated coach? Is it a more senior person in the same role, but a peer-to-peer coaching, or is it someone else? And if it's someone else, if you could tell us in chat, that would be great. Struggling to find a coach, which is really, really interesting, because coaching is for me, having been a coach for 15 years, one of the best things you can do. So it can't be because people don't want to do it. It may well be, and anecdotally, we've seen this. Some organizations don't necessarily see the value in coaching because it's really hard to quantify, and we're going to come on to value a little bit later. But it is, and you know, Mark suggested that it's one of the most important roles for a manager working in medical affairs. And we need to remember that, because often it is the coaching, the time with a team member, that goes when you're being asked to attend yet another meeting. And I don't think, despite the fact that you know, COVID has given us the opportunity to spend more time with people, albeit virtually, than ever before. We haven't got the traveling and everything to do. But I think that there have been times when you know, people have been working flat out back to back in meetings that wouldn't have happened before. So again, we haven't taken the opportunities we've been given.
So from Millie, what's your definition of a coach? So there you go. So you've asked people who provides that. How would you define a coach, Kevin?
I'm being completely prepared to be shouted down by our panelists. But I think a coach is someone who is prepared to put themselves to one side. So it's not about them. It's about the person that they're working with. I think it's a person that is good at asking questions and not afraid to ask probing and difficult questions at times. I think they need to be a good listener. But above all, they need to believe that the person that they are coaching has the answer. They just don't know they have the answer yet. Would any of my colleagues on the panel like to add or take anything away from that? Maya B, I can see you're nodding.
That's right. No, I think it's a perfect description. And it doesn't even require an in-depth knowledge of the role of the person you're coaching. It doesn't. So basically anyone with the attributes you just described would be a great coach.
Brilliant. Thank you. Has that answered the question?
Yes, and even better, they thought it was a great description. So there you go, Kevin.
I'm getting something right. And I think what Maya just said there, often a non-expert is a better coach because they ask the questions without making any assumptions. So because you don't understand a situation, you ask a question about the situation that someone who's done the role perhaps, or I remember coaching someone who was managing someone on the region that they'd worked before they were a manager. So they were just coming out with answers. This is what I do. This is what I do. Well, actually, this isn't about you. This is about the person. So next question to our panelists, how often should an individual receive coaching? And Jessica, we haven't heard from you yet, so I'm going to come straight to you.
Sure. Thanks, Kevin. Look, I think the simple answer to this question is it depends, which is not an answer at all, but maybe let me give you some context to that. So it depends on the individual who's receiving coaching, their experience level, what their development objectives are and where they sit within in the organization in terms of their experience. You mentioned right at the beginning around the fact that, you know, the attendees on today's call are, you know, in-role MSLs. And I think for MSL functional coaching, that's often when a lot of the benefit is received. Once you've gone through your onboarding period and really starting to put into practice your skill sets. But I think for me, one of the big components of how often you should receive coaching is actually almost flipped around to say, how willing are you to be the recipient of coaching? Because if you are not willing to be an active participant in the coaching process, then you might as well just be getting feedback from your peers, because that is what you will be receiving if you're not actually fully engaged in a coaching process. So I think that's a non-answer to your question, but it really does depend on the circumstances and the situation.
Brilliant. It's an answer I really appreciate. So thank you for that. Maya S.
I would say, since we are talking about coaching and not training, and coaching is always individualized, it is on the job. So that is why, depending upon the kind of team that you have, the team composition, whether they are coming from an academic background of being doctors, you know, there can be MBBS or MD doctors in your team. There can be PhDs and pharmacy graduates and postgraduates. So from their level of academics, as well as experience, there can be freshers in the team with 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 years of experience. Also, the kind of domain you are in, whether it is oncology, cardiology, rare disease, or you are in generics field. And I would say also the product life cycle, where the product is in the life cycle. So depending upon all these factors, you have to tailor the coaching. For some, you would require a lot of handholding. For some experienced people, it is just jacking up their game in terms of scientific storytelling. For others, it is talking about moving the discussion from a question on handling of price to showing that your product is premium. So moving towards value creation of the product.
Brilliant.
Right? So depending upon a lot of factors, it has to be a tailored, customized approach.
Yeah. Thank you. And just briefly, Maya B.
I agree on flexibility and individuality. However, I think it's an ongoing process. And if you be too flexible, you might lose track. So I would really like, if both are in agreement, I would really like to see a coaching meeting every 4 to 6 weeks.
And I think it's interesting that you say that, Maya. And I think, do you mean in terms of like a check-in? So it doesn't have to be a full-blown, let's have a conversation about a development area. It's a, how are you doing? And if you've got a good coaching relationship, that how are you doing question is all they need to tell you how they're doing. Good, bad,
absolutely. Good. Absolutely.
Brilliant. Thank you. I think we might have another question. What is your view on peer-to-peer coaching? Is this also beneficial, and do you have any experience of this working well?
I can make a brief comment on it if you like. I think it can be incredibly valuable. And if I look across some of the organization that I work in, sometimes you have new MSL roles in areas or countries where that's the only person and it's a new MSL, a new manager, and actually being able to connect with another MSL, whether it's in their therapeutic area or not, somewhere else, is incredibly helpful for them to sort of understand what normal looks like, what good looks like, and just to be able to talk to someone else doing the role, I think is incredibly useful. You can learn a huge amount from your peers. So I see there's a huge value in sort of peer coaching.
So I would agree. I guess we need to think about what does that relationship actually look like and who's supporting that relationship. So what are the ground rules, if you like? Does the peer who's doing the coaching know what coaching is, or are they being more of a mentor and offering them solutions? So I think it needs to be explored further. I have got experience of peer-to-peer coaching, but those peer coaches received coaching training. So it wasn't something that they just did. Because for me, I think that you can do just as much damage with a bad coaching session as you can with no coaching at all. So I think anyone that's doing it should at least have some insight into what they should be doing. I'm seeing some nodding from the panelists as well. So it would appear that I'm not speaking out of turn. Thank you. And we've highlighted this really. We've talked about it, but the role is changing. You know, we are moving really fastly from this reactive support function, which I recognize from my early time in the industry, across to this valued, strategic, trusted scientific partner. And we have to think about that both internally within the organization, when we're talking more about cross-functional working. And we have to think about that in terms of creating value for the HCPs that we're working with. Because this marketplace is really crowded. And when I say marketplace, I mean the environment. So you will not be the only MSL that's trying to see this clinician. So what are you going to do that actually creates the value that makes you the one they want to see, not the other five people that are trying to make an appointment? So that means being on top of our skills, being the best that we can possibly be, and coaching will help us get there. And I wish I had time to talk about what that might look like. Some people see coach as an opportunity for their development and not focused on the coachee. How do organizations measure this? For me, it comes down to the evaluation of the coach by the coachee. And that should be a process that organizations undergo. And it should be ongoing, not part of the end of year review, which is when people measure things they want to be good at. I have seen it. It's not pretty. And we should always remember that it's the coachee that we're focusing on. This was alluded to earlier. And actually, I think it was Andrew that talked about it. In terms of, you know, how much training have you as MSLs received in the last 18 months because the opportunity was available? And how much of that have you been able to use? How much of that do you remember? How much of that was valuable? And if we think about adult learning principles, those training courses usually only speak to the 10% on the right-hand side. So that's the structured course or program. If it's done with some group work, then you can move into the 20, where you start to socialize new learning and think about what it means to you. The greatest proportion of learning will happen when you're out there doing the job. And that's where coaching helps you bridge from the 20 to the 70. Because you'll know what you need to be able to do. The coach is there to support you in doing that. The coach is there to do what Andrew said and help you move from your comfort zone into your discomfort zone. It might only be a little bit, but that little bit might make the difference. So it's really, really important that actually we keep it involved. Just to illustrate this, I don't know how many of you are familiar with Ebbinghaus's forgetting curve, but this actually suggests that within 1 month, you can only retain 21% of new knowledge and skill. So if you think about this, if it's not referred to, if it's not tried, if it's not reinforced, actually, not only are you not going to be as good as you could be at this new skill, but actually the money that the organization has put in to developing you, 80% of that has been wasted. So it's important for both the individual and the organization to think about that. And just as a bit of interest, Ebbinghaus's forgetting curve, I think, was first described in something like 1850, you know, nearly 200 years old, but it still hangs together. This is proper science, and I know that most of the audience really appreciate proper science. So I just thought it was worth sharing that. So question three, how can the impact of coaching be measured? And I'm going to come to you, Maya B, first.
Thank you, Kevin. And I love you asking me those questions, because we've just rolled out a new coaching platform and we've been applying competency frameworks to measure some of the coaching effects. And the way we do this is we have a competency model, let's say for HCP interactions. And after every coaching meeting, we will provide the evaluation and the results and the focus topics, also the topics that you want to focus on during the next HCP interactions in a platform. And this is fully transparent. So it's done by the coach as well as the coachee. Everyone can see the competency framework, so you know exactly what is meant by, you know, the evaluation. And this is a continuous process as well. And after the course of like 12 or 18 months, you can really nicely see an impact of the coaching. During this time, you will change the focus. And one of the aspects I love as well is that you're providing, so the coach is providing feedback to the coach as well after every session. To your earlier point, I think this is super important and increases transparency. And transparency is one aspect I'm also finding very important in coaching.
Brilliant. Thank you, Maya. Jessica, what would you like to add?
Thanks, Kevin. I think Maya has mentioned some really key points about linking it back to competency models and development through those elements. Because if you think about the key concept of any KPI or metric you put in place, which is what you measure is what will get done. If you're purely focused on just have I done 6 coaching calls with my girls this month or this year, that's what you'll get. But if you're looking at actually how are we seeing those individuals develop against their competency model through both leading and lagging indicators. So leading might be in terms of whether they've moved up a step in the competency framework and in terms of the levels of, you know, whatever it is that your competency model is measured on. But you want to also see that that's having an impact even earlier than that. So, you know, is the individual starting to receive positive feedback from peers around their presentation skills, if that's what you're working on? So you really want to be focused on showing how you're actually addressing the objectives of coaching. If it is just to do coaching for the sake of coaching, then how many times a year is a perfect measure of that?
Yeah.
You're actually looking for impact. You need to be measuring things that show that impact. And I think that's really important for any KPI. Coaching being one of them.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jessica. Andrew, finally on this question, coming to you, because you've got some experience of this, haven't you?
Well, yes. And I, you know, listening to us this morning, I think there's clearly not necessarily a couple of schools of thought, but we are quite seemingly of a single mind here that coaching is worth investing in, something that we should encourage and foster in our organizations. But that's not always the case. And I think that's something that I've certainly come across previously in my career, that I've felt that the most impactful way to improve performance has been through coaching, and that there was the necessity then to demonstrate it. And so these measures that we produce are pretty important, because coaching, I think, can be seen by some senior leaders as a soft skill and a sort of a counseling service, as opposed to that sort of driving directorial piece that they feel may produce changes in behaviours in a different way. So we carried out a small, I think it's perhaps overdoing it to call it a randomised control trial, but we took a couple of cohorts of first line managers and we supported the development of their coaching skill. So that this was all based around their team's ability. So as Jessica was just describing, in-call performance. So that was our measure of performance. We built the coaching capability of one group of managers higher than we were able to build it with the other. And we actually built that by coaching them on their coaching. It was all a bit sort of coaching squared. But by the end of quite a short period of time, so three interventions over 4 or 5 months, we were able to demonstrate that the team with the more effective coach had more effective in-call performance. And I think that was something we felt we needed to do to demonstrate to the organization we were in at the time that coaching could drive the impact, the outcome measures that we were looking to develop as an organization.
Brilliant, thank you. And I think there's also, so there's something there about, was the coach better because they knew they were being watched, in which case should the coach be being coached? And I'm a huge advocate of that, having spent 10 years of my career doing that exactly. But I also think that there's something to be said, and we shouldn't minimize the impact of how the coachee feels as a result of being coached. So do they feel more confident? Do they feel more able to make decisions for themselves? I think that's really important. And this just goes to support this element again. If we're expecting enhanced competencies from a team, we need to be providing the support for them to enhance those competencies. It's not good enough to just hand them the latest handbook with a behavioral matrix in and say, this is what good looks like, go away and be good. Actually, it's helping them through the process. That relates to having a training needs analysis. And this is something that someone can do for themselves. This is a great conversation between manager and direct report or coaching coachee. And it doesn't have to be a tick box thing. It's actually, where do you think you want to focus? What do you want to be able to do better? What would that look like? What would you be seeing, hearing, feeling that would make you know that you'd got there? And then you create the training plan. And coaching is only one solution for developing your skills. We must remember that. And because of that, I want to move into the next question, which is what are the challenges in coaching, in our current environment, in where we are in time, and just in organisations in general. So I'm going to come to you first, Mark, this time, please.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. So there are three things that sort of leap to mind for me when it comes to the challenges in coaching. And I'll sum this up as sort of mindset, adopting the right mindset, the skill set of the coach, and then perhaps the toolkit and having the right tools to enable the coaching. So I'll expand on that with a few examples. So one of the greatest challenges, I think, is building that trusted collaborative relationship between coach and coachee. And that really, as you mentioned earlier, Kevin, requires the right skills on the coach, someone who is a good listener, can ask the right sequential questions, can be empathetic, and can take a sort of calm approach and focus on the individual. So perhaps the biggest challenge for the manager there is actually the letting go part. The realizing they don't have to be the expert and they're not there to direct, tell, or kind of teach someone. So that you have to employ that sort of skill set very actively. I think the other thing that I'd kind of point out that, again, was mentioned earlier is really making the time, being really deliberate about starting the coaching conversations. Because I think once you've kind of opened the floodgates, it then becomes much easier to provide very ad hoc coaching that can be done much more frequently. So for example, you know, traditionally a lot of coaching took place on a field visit and they were perhaps infrequent. It involved waiting to be with someone on that particular day. But actually in a virtual world, you know, we've got some great examples of coaching that can be done very frequently. So in the same week, you could coach someone prior to a really important interaction with a thought leader. You might be able to join the interaction and observe. Mm-hmm. And even if you can't, you can still meet that person for half an hour afterwards and provide coaching input then. So I think it's just getting over these preconceived sort of obstacles around time, adopting the right mindset, being really deliberate, and then developing your skill set.
Yeah, brilliant, thank you. I'm conscious of time, so I'm gonna move on, but we just had a comment come through, which I think is really pertinent. Alex said it's really important that there is a goal for the coaching, because actually without a goal, you can kind of be flapping around all over the place. So it goes back to Jessica's point, really. It's not about providing coaching six times a year. It's about providing coaching with a real clear aim that you can measure.
No, so one of the questions that came in, and this is a question for the panel, was that there are so many different methodologies out there. How did the panel decide which is the best coaching model?
Thanks, Helen. Maybe I can jump in here. And look, I don't think there's one approach that is right or wrong. And what you really need to do is find a model that fits both well with in terms of what you're trying to achieve, so those objectives, that enables both the coach and coachee to be skilled in what is expected during this process. And I think importantly, it's also clear, right? It's clear and easy to understand. But it's really critical, regardless of what framework or what toolkit you use, that both individuals have an expectation of what they'll be asked to do in the coaching process. And I think more so for the coach than the coachee, but more for the coach, the skill set is really unique. And the panelists touched on this in that it's not about providing a solution. It's about helping the individual get to that solution. And so that piece is really critical to make sure that is taught before and regardless of what framework you use to then implement the coaching itself.
So another poll, just out of interest, how many of you are currently receiving coaching? A very small proportion of our team online are currently receiving coaching. It would be interesting if we had more time to explore why that is. What I would suggest is get your managers to listen or watch this webinar tomorrow to see if we can convince them that it's actually more important than they currently think. And straight into another question. Is coaching always the right solution?
I would say that coaching is right, but it has to be done at all the levels. You know, it should not just be the MSLs. In fact, I would prefer starting with the medical affairs directors and the MSL managers. So you have to catch them from the top and then percolate the wisdom down. That's how you can have the maximum benefit for the whole department and the organization. So this is the right thing to do. But since we understand that, you know, the environment is changing and it is getting more and more demanding. So to cater to this dynamic environment, we need to have something coming from the top. So that is the way to go about it.
Sorry, thanks, Maya. Mark?
I hope this is not too controversial, but I'm going to say that coaching is not always the right solution. And I'm going to say that as a manager, you know, there are situations where a different approach is appropriate and you have to pick the right style at the right time and be flexible dependent on the individual and the situation. And I'll just give you a couple of examples. I mean, when an MSL is completely new to role and maybe they're new to industry, they've come from academia or clinical practice, they may need considerable direction in the beginning to help them, you know, understand what good looks like, and they'll require a lot of feedback. So you may lean towards a more directive and teaching style before you can switch to a supporting or coaching style with them. And similarly, you know, you may have a very experienced and competent MSL who's completely out of their comfort zone by being asked to do a completely new task, or maybe they've had to switch therapeutic areas, and you may have to switch your style to adopt the right approach for them in the moment with that particular task or activity. And then I guess the final example, you know, is maybe where you've got a serious performance issue or a behavioral issue. And if we think about the nature of the MSL role, you know, and the need for very good judgment and decision making, you know, sometimes you might have a situation where you have to step in and you have to maybe set clearer objectives, and perhaps prior coaching simply hasn't worked. So I think there are times and a place where you have to adopt a very flexible style.
Brilliant. Thank you, Mark. And it's almost like you've seen my slides. Maya B, if you could give us your view on this question, please.
I absolutely agree. And just to add that if a person is not open to coaching, so not open to receiving feedback and digesting the feedback, and then it's not the right time, right? Then you have to provide another kind of support, let's say, as Mark just alluded to. So the person has to be open, the coachee has to be wanting to be coached, at least to some extent.
Brilliant, thank you. And I also think that there's a place here for the manager or the coach to look at themselves. So actually, if the person, so Mark, if coming to you and thinking about your behavioral performance issue, actually, were the expectations made clear right up front? So have they not done something because they didn't know that that was what they were supposed to do? And actually, you know, if you've tried coaching, did they know what they were supposed to do as a result of that? So I think it is about looking inward as the coach or the manager, as well as looking outward at the performance of the coachee. But yeah, it's a fascinating topic. And in my experience, in one of the organizations that I've worked with in the past, we actually did such a good job, in inverted commas, with their managers that they tried to coach every situation, having not done coaching at all. And we had to coach them to uncoach, to say, actually, do you know what? There are instances where this isn't right. That, you know, they might need to be retrained. They might need just to talk to a mentor, to talk to someone who's doing the same job, or you might just need to manage their performance. So it is really important that we keep our eye on that. And this is what I was talking about in terms of you seeing my slides, Mark. It's where is this person in relation to their career or the skill that they need to develop? Finding the right solution for them and, you know, acknowledging that there's management on top of that. A question that we had, and I'd like to start with Maya B on this one, is coaching only for MSLs?
Absolutely not. It's basically for everyone who's open to grow. It's about growing. And apart from all of what we discussed earlier, it will enhance your engagement in general because people love to apply new skills, no matter what role it is.
Brilliant. Thank you. Andrew.
I totally agree with that. I mean, if it's a simple yes, no question, then of course the answer is everybody should receive coaching. Everybody will benefit from coaching. I think there is the phenomena that the further up an organization you go, the less on the job coaching you receive and the more over the shoulder coaching that goes on. I think quite often a second or senior manager may think they are coaching their reports because they're talking about coaching, but often it's talking about the coaching that their coachee is delivering as opposed to coaching them themselves. And I think it's something that is rarely seen, but is a huge advantage to any organization where coaching genuinely is a cultural behavior.
Mm. Thank you. And Jessica.
Yeah, thanks. Look, just to add to what Maya and Andrew have said, I agree that yes, coaching is definitely something that everyone can benefit from. I think there is a uniqueness in terms of the MSL role, where coaching for the skill sets that are required in terms of engagement excellence and those external facing role that the MSL play, that's really critical and that's really specific. But one thing we haven't actually touched on at all today, and I think is also really important for people to consider, is professional development coaching. And where that is slightly different, and I think it needs to be thought of differently when we're thinking about not just the MSL role, but every role in the organizations that we work for, is that that type of coaching really shouldn't come from someone within your direct or senior reporting line. And that really needs to be from someone where you can have really open and honest conversations and not be fearful of potential impact or repercussions in terms of your development or your objectives. But I think this coaching is also really critical, but comes with some nuances different to perhaps what we're talking about when we're talking specifically around that functional MSL and particularly that field type coaching.
Definitely. Thank you. I also think that there's there's something here about raising the expectations of the coachee into what they should expect from being coached. And that happens in the in-role stuff and probably more so with the professional development stuff. Because if you don't know what coaching should achieve for you, if you don't know how you should feel, actually, it's not going to work. So we've mentioned several times today people being resistant to coaching. And in my experience, they're resistant to coaching because they don't get it. They don't understand. They think it is something that their manager has been tasked to do with them. It's one of their KPIs. So I'm going to have my manager out. They're going to talk to me. I have to put up with it. Whereas actually, you know, when you get to a point where people are saying, can you come out with me again today? You know that actually the coaching is likely to be being more beneficial. So there's so much more that we could talk about.
I was just going to add, Kevin, that I think, you know, when you've had a very positive coaching experience as a coachee, when you feel that you've benefited from a great coaching conversation, that I think really enables you to be more open-minded to the value of coaching. You recognize the value of coaching. When you've had a scenario where you've been coached in inverted commas, and in fact you haven't been coached, but you've been told, then you're feeling, and as you know, I'm all about feelings. So if it doesn't feel good to me, then I am less likely to buy into it. And I think that sort of links us right back to the very beginning. You know, what might it fit for all of the panelists on the line? What might it feel like as a coachee to be coached by you? And in fact, the best coaches, the best coaching situations are when we don't even realize we've been coached at all. It's not been labeled that we're going to have a coaching conversation. It's simply been a conversation.
A few years ago now, I was lucky enough to meet Graham Alexander, who was one of the guys who created the GROW model. And while he said he completely advocated the use of the model still, he said he was much less rigid now. And actually, his definition of coaching is a helpful conversation. And that's exactly what it should be, that actually we're helping people through talking to solve things for ourselves. And let's be honest, that's what we're doing when we're mixing with our HCPs. We're having helpful conversations. There should be benefit to them. So the two things are inextricably linked.
I completely resonate with what has been spoken, because there has to be a buy-in from, you know, the person who is being coached. This coachee should understand that it is in his benefit. So it is not just about gaining knowledge, but it is about development of skills, enhancement of skills, and overall knowledge, so that this person is not just a serviceable MSL, but he's excelling in this role, you know, and so that, you know, out when he's out on the field, it is the doctors, the HCPs, which are saying that, wow, this MSL is from this company. You know, so that is the ultimate goal. that your doctor should start respecting you as a professional. So if we are able to achieve that, then, you know, both, I would say, the coach and the coachee are successful.
Brilliant.
Training sets the background, you know, it sets the floor, but it is coaching which takes you to the ceiling.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Kevin, maybe I'd like to say, as we've seen, not many MSLs are being coached currently, that coaches or managers shouldn't be afraid to start coaching. Absolutely. It's so helpful, and it's not a big thing. It's just getting your head around it, having this useful conversation, maybe deciding on one of the coaching models, like the GROW model, really. It's the benefit is so much greater than sometimes the fears people seem to have to start coaching at all.
Yeah, and there are so many resources available to actually help you get on the right track, even watching videos on YouTube of someone coaching, so you get an idea about what a conversation should look like.
Concept of a helpful conversation kind of disarms it a little bit and makes it feel very accessible. And if you can make yourself available and accessible and listen to your team, then I think that's, you know, that's the best place to start.
Interesting questions just coming from Lorna. Would it be helpful to know, of the MSLs who are not receiving coaching, how many of them are wanting coaching? It's a great question. Unfortunately, we haven't got the opportunity to answer it here and now. But I would like to know, of the people that say they didn't want coaching, why they didn't want it. And then our job would be to coach them into wanting it. Because I think when you've received good coaching, actually, you see the benefit in it and you only want more. So over to you, Helen.
Well, over to me. I mean, I certainly feel that from the questions that have been asked and from the richness of the conversation, that this is a webinar that could be repeated in the future. We're hugely passionate about coaching, and I just would... You know, everyone who's not receiving coaching, building what Maya was just suggesting, you know, go and ask your manager, you know, can you point me in the direction, if you're not able to do it, point me in the direction of a coach, someone that you might know within the organization. So thank you so much to all of the panelists. You know, as always, it's so helpful for industry colleagues to hear from other industry colleagues. And I know that that's a value that many of the panelists find from participating in the webinar. Thanks to Kevin. And thank you, as always, to the production team in the background. Without you, none of this would be possible. So thanks to Greg. But a huge thanks to all of our participants for joining us, whether you're joining us live or whether you join us in the future. We really enjoy sharing these experiences with you. So goodbye for now.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.